Press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to take a spin.
The shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama. Oh, that's a tweet. Did they book? Who got nominated?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life
in
New York City.
I am at Connor McDowell on Twitter and Instagram. Wait, I just like switched up the format and did that. Isn't that fun?
Well, you're on the quest for more followers, so I got to respect.
Dylan, that was private.
While you're at that, I'm at Dylan McDowell.
Now that Dylan's outed me for the second time in my life. Wait, that's a lie. Okay, moving on. Dylan, the energy is already great. I'm so excited.
I know. There's so many things I immediately want to jump into. We're having a great time kikiing with our guests so far. But there is something that I want to address just with you before we talk to them.
What did I do?
No, it's not what you've done. It's that we haven't gotten the chance to talk about Drag Race yet.
I know. Okay, and
there's been so much going on.
We have a winner from season 12. That's how long it's been since we've talked about Drag Race. And I think that she is the rightful winner of the season.
100%.
Absolutely.
We love Jada.
And we've actually been like rewatching old seasons of Drag Race because we are still quarantining. And I was just gagged. Like 2 hours ago, we were watching season 6. There is a double Shantae You Stay in season 6, and no one remembers it.
It's been lost to history.
I was shook to my core, and I've seen this episode before. Darian Lake and Ben De La Creme, spoiler.
Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of Drag Race right now. We have All Stars 5, we have Canada's Drag Race, and then, of course, you and I have How's Your Head, Hun? With Michelle Visage going on.
Yes, on WoW Plus, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, WoW Presents Plus. What are your thoughts on All Stars 5?
I think it's a great season.
Mm-hmm.
I went into it thinking it was Shea Coulee's to lose, and I still feel that way. I think she's killing it, but Jujubee is, she's chewing the scenery. She's got it.
I
think they are final two, and maybe Alexis Mateo up there with them.
Bam! I love her. I think that she's in the final three, even though she hasn't won any challenges yet. Seem to be pushing Cracker.
They do.
Which is great. She's fun.
She's fun. You could tell Rue was not enjoying her Gaga Star Is Born snatch game.
No, I mean, I think she was very prepared and she just kind of tried to shoehorn all of her responses into all of the answers, but she wasn't as improv-y as Alexis Mateo or Jujubee for that matter, or Shay.
I know, Shay was great. I mean, Shay's had so many iconic runway looks too, and I think she turned it out. That one where they sang that song, where they all had to write a verse to the song. I think it was like the second episode.
To the song, I'm in Love.
Mm-hmm.
It was so fun.
Unbelievable.
I know.
Shay's just, she's great. And I loved that her vulnerability of sharing how losing, you know, season 9 was like heartbreaking and devastating. I never really thought about how like fans would bring that up to her. And like that was a moment of shame for her. So I just feel like this could be righting the wrongs. Not that Sasha didn't deserve it.
Well, it's so strange to me that the way that fans, and we can maybe even talk to our guests about this, feel like the way that they can act at the stage door or like at like a meet and greet line. Like the fact that she said that fans would like remove their hat and flower petals would come out. Like that's got to be triggering. And like the things that people probably bring to those lines is, I mean, it's strange. I think that the fan-entertainer connection can be a little complicated.
Agree. Okay, wait, I have two questions about All Stars 5 before we jump in with our guest. First one.
Okay.
Do you think that they will do a battle for the queens where someone comes back in the competition? Because we're at 5 queens now.
I don't know how many episodes are left in the season. Otherwise, I could predict. You had a fun idea that you thought everyone would come back for Snatch Game.
I did.
And then they could not possibly win back, but I don't know. They usually always do it, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
Who do you think would come back? Derek Barry?
Oh, she brings the drama. I think maybe Angina went a little soon, but I also don't think she was prepared.
Fair. Okay, my other question is, who's winning the season, in your opinion?
100% Shea Coulee. It's like the Alaska season 2 situation where it's someone's to lose.
All right. Love it.
Yeah. And we can talk about Canada's Drag Race another time, because I just, there's plenty of thoughts there, but it's only been like an episode so far. But
okay, can we bring our guest in, please?
We'll bring our guest in because I can tell that they might have had some thoughts, too, about what we were talking about, but we'll see.
Maybe.
Maybe not.
All right, Dylan.
There's other things to discuss. Our guest today is the Lucille Lortel Award-winning and double Drama Desk-nominated superstar, known for his role in leading the viral sensation Be More Chill to audiences worldwide as Michael Mel. In true drama fashion, his career began in the second national tour of Spring Awakening as Otto, followed by his Broadway debut singing Light of the World in the 40th anniversary revival of Stephen Schwartz's Godspell. It seems he's rarely not on stage, having appeared in Here Lies Love, Tick, Tick, Boom, The Lightning Thief, Brooklyn Crush, and more off-Broadway. His frequent collaborations with Tony nominee Joe Iconis culminated in his acclaimed cabaret duo show and album, Two Player Game, which is now available via Ghostlight Records. He has been seen on TV on Bull, Divorce, The View, David Letterman, James Corden, the Tony Awards, and so much more, including Superstore, but we'll talk about that in a second. Last fall, he moved to LA to appear opposite Queen MJ Rodriguez in Little Shop of Horrors, as well as alongside Miss America Ferrera in Superstore. His voice can be heard on cast albums for Godspell, two recordings of Be More Chill, The Jonathan Larson Project, and more. He is a role model, a queer icon, and a friend. Please welcome to Drama,
George Salazar.
Oh my God, that was like what do you call it? The speeches you give at funerals.
Oh, a eulogy.
A eulogy. That was so nice. Thanks for having me on, boys.
I'm so happy.
George, we've wanted you forever. And
I know. I know. I'm so glad we're finally doing it.
You're just so busy.
Well, maybe.
As your bio said, you're always doing something.
Okay, wait. I was listening to this bio, and you were on. Were you on? Is this Sarah Jessica Parker's divorce?
Yeah, I mean, that was my first TV job, and it was very. It was very quick. It was a really interesting experience because there was an actor on set who was kind of a monster.
Oh.
And was like really mean and like not a warm presence. It wasn't Sarah. She was very sweet. But I played, I was cast as like a referee for a like basketball game. And the first thing that this person said to me was, "So you're a real ref?" And I was like, "No, I'm an actor." And he goes, "Have you ever reffed a basketball game before?" And I was like, "No, I'm an actor." And he just went, "Ugh," and walked away.
Oh, jeez.
And then decided that he was going to change the lines, and so my lines changed, and the role shrunk into. Basically, like it ended up being just like a glorified extra.
Oh my God!
There's some tea for you.
That's tea. We're starting out piping hot right here.
Yeah, girl, right out the gates. Speaking of piping hot, I am in Palm Springs,
mm-hmm.
and I yesterday spent 4 hours in the pool, floating and singing songs, and then I realized 4 hours had passed, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I was a lobster. So,
oh my God.
I'm really, really proud to be the first lobster to appear on the podcast.
I know this is big.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me and my lobster self. I'm in a hoodie right now because my skin is like this.
He's pointing at a blaringly deep red painting in the background. And
it's of like a child or something.
Yeah. There's like a couple of these in this. I'm in an Airbnb in Palm Springs. So there's like a bunch of. It's a gay owned home, and you know in Airbnbs they have closets that are locked that like the homeowners only have access to.
Yeah.
The closet here, there's a little like label on the above the doorknob that just says homo owners. And then in the kitchen, they have dual drawers. So, like, you open a drawer, and then there's, like, room for stuff, and then there's another drawer that kind of stacks over it. And those are labeled with tops and bottoms.
I'm obsessed. Can I move in?
Yeah, I want to meet these people. I need to be friends with these people, mostly so that I could just come stay at their
house. Yeah, right.
Is this Ross Matthews' Palm Springs home?
I mean, might as well be.
I'm sure. Have you seen Ross walking the streets wearing a caftan?
Girl, there's a pandemic happening. I'm here, but I'm not leaving, you know?
Respect. Yeah. At least there you have a pool. That's nice.
That's, yeah. I mean, I've been, you know, my apartment in West Hollywood is like very nice and very comfortable and spacious. But I don't have a pool.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, the 4 hours I spent baking in the sun yesterday, worth it. Worth it also because I got so pale during quarantine.
Oh my God, yeah. Right?
And now I'm like a really beautiful shade of like cartoon characters who get angry and their faces turn red. Yeah. That's the shade that I was going for.
When George revealed his sunburn to us, we both winced in pain. It was sad. Wait, George, all sunburn aside, we do have to ask you an important question.
Give it to me.
Are you well?
I'm well, all things considered. I come from Florida. That's my home state. My parents are still there. My dad is 2 years away from retirement and has worked for Universal Studios for like the past 25 years. And they're open. I don't understand. But they're open. And so every day is a little bit of a stressful situation of me just being like, I wish they closed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a really powerful thing to, you know, be sitting in the middle of a pandemic and to watch, you know, protests and march happening in all 50 states. This is such a pivotal moment in our country and in our world, even because there were Black Lives Matter marches and protests across the globe. So I do feel hopeful, COVID aside, that the other virus in our country is, you know, we're all going to work to dismantle this thing, and give everyone a fair shot.
You said that beautifully.
Thanks.
Wait, I was just thinking, do they have Universal? Do they have any sort of safety precautions for their employees?
Yeah. So fortunately, my dad works like in the back, so he doesn't come into contact with truly insane people who decide like, let's go to the theme park today. So he's backstage and it's fine. But out there, they have hand washing station, like hand sanitizer stations throughout all the parks. There are supposed to be social distance markers throughout the queues. The problem is, and this is what my dad told me, is that at night, the night crews hose down all of the lines and pressure wash. And the pressure washing starts to peel and lift the stickers off the ground. And then, so they'll come off and no one will replace them.
What a mess.
And then apparently, I read online that there was like, there was a someone who went and kept an eye on a hand sanitizing station that was without hand sanitizer for 3 hours with no one refilling.
Oh my God.
So Florida is really, I mean, they've always been a very dumb state. and now they're just like really taking the crown.
So are you from Orlando specifically?
Mm-hmm. Well, oh, wow. I was born in Staten Island.
Okay.
But then I was raised in Orlando.
Wow. Okay. We love Orlando, but I don't have any plans going back there until...
No, me neither.
For years, even.
I really want to go home and visit my parents and help them with, mm-hmm. like, you know, groceries, all that stuff. But, I mean, the idea of flying and then quarantining for 2 weeks and then, you know, it's just... It doesn't really make sense at the moment. So I'm in Palm Springs instead.
Yes.
Well, that's nice. And you deserve some time in Palm Springs after everything that's been going on. And
I think we all do.
You've been working so hard.
Tyra Banks style. Do you remember when Tyra was on Top Model and she like fake acted out that she was like really tired and she fainted? And then they're all like, oh my God, Tyra. They're like freaking out. And then she like stands up and she's like, I was acting. And it's like the most shocking thing in the entire world. That's, you've been working hard, but not fake acting.
I mean, you know, I've that's very nice, but I also have been doing a lot of sitting around on my ass.
But you have your, I think it's on hiatus right now, right? But you have your Sunday show. Sundays on
the, yeah. Yeah. We that show was created as a distraction at the beginning of quarantine. And then George Floyd's murder and the Black Lives Matter movement just made it feel like not the right program to, you know, be investing my time and energy into. So she's on hold, but we're reformatting her and I mean, we're fully like changing the show into this, you know, discussion with people of marginalized communities, friends of mine, and we're all going to share our experiences of, you know, being whatever we are in America. Wow. And then I think we'll still hold on to a delayed duet situation.
Mm-hmm.
With the idea that, like, you know, across and through all of these barriers, me and this guest will sing the same song. I think it'll be really, really fun. But
that's great.
Yeah, we're currently trying to figure all of that out logistically too, because my producer is starting work on Drew Barrymore's talk show that's coming out.
Oh my god!
So I lose a substantial amount of his energy.
I had no idea that Drew was coming out with the talk show.
Yeah,
I forget what
network, but I think it's going to be great.
I love her. I think it'll be so good.
Yeah, she's. I think it'll be, you know, in the way that like I love Kelly Clarkson's show, because mm-hmm. she is so accessible and warm and friendly, and I mean, you really feel like you've known her. I mean, we have known her for years, yeah. But like you really feel like you are personally connected to Kelly Clarkson watching her talk show. I think it's so. I love when they give shows to people with big hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Drew's show is going to be, you know, very similar.
Oh, I can't wait.
Charlie's Angels 2 Full Throttle is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It would be.
You know. Well, her name is Dylan. I was, like, so shook that a girl had the name of Dylan. Like, that was, like, very
new. Oh, my God. Broke down gender, you know, mm-hmm. expectations that were set even, you know, 20 years ago with the McGee Charlie's yeah. Angels.
Oh, yeah. Drew's deliveries of lines in that movie, genius. And she was also one of the producers.
Yeah, Drew's delivery of really everything, going mm-hmm. back to E.T.
Going back to E.T.
She just has a... Like, what must it feel like to have an entire life of just nailing line deliveries for your entire existence? I don't know.
Oh my God, I know.
Well, her, like, great-great-grandfather, John Barrymore, is who that Barrymore Theater is named for on Broadway, too.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, wait, because
Kristen Wiig used to do an amazing Drew Barrymore on SNL, and I won't even try to do it because I can't do it justice, but it is phenomenal.
Well, because there was a bit where she was talking out of the side of her mouth, and she's like, and my great-great-great-grandfather, John Barrymore, used to write it down on a typewriter. It's like, it's so funny. Is that the Sofia Vergara One Direction episode from like 2012?
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
We loved, oh my God, George, we loved One Direction. Do you have a connection to that group at all?
I don't, other than the fact that I think that they're all ridiculously hot.
Yes.
And their music, consists of mostly bangers. All their solo stuff I love.
Yes. Harry yeah. is a true superstar.
And yeah. possibly bi. Yeah.
I know, that circles the drain every once in a while.
I didn't know that. God. Gotta go. Gotta go find Harry Styles.
I know. Well, he might be out there.
I wish I was quarantined with him.
I'll wear a mask.
Good.
Mask for mask.
Is that what dating is going to be like? Like outdoor mask?
I don't know. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about that because quarantine is, I mean, this is horrible. This is like really bad.
Terrible.
Like the novelty of it has just completely worn out, you know, like, and by novelty, I mean like, I remember in the beginning it was like, well, the silver lining to all of this is that like, I'm connecting with all my friends more frequently than I had been before.
100%.
That's not cutting it anymore.
No.
I need like a person.
literally. I know.
Cause I'm in Palm Springs alone. which is what Connor thought.
I literally thought you were like on a solo vacation. Like, oh my God. Wild.
And then you said, and I quote, "I felt sad for you."
Facts.
You're a lobster in Palm Springs. If anyone,
I'm a lonely lobster. That's a great song title.
That's gonna be the title of this episode, probably. Lonely Lobster.
Okay, the Lonely Lobster.
We'll see. Okay, so I do have a couple of questions just about things that you've done throughout your career and everything, but I do want to know what it was like working with MJ Rodriguez on Little Shop of Horrors.
Ugh. Literally dream after dream after dream after dream. MJ is a really special, touched by God person in my life. Like, there was a concern of mine going in that because MJ, I remember seeing MJ in the Rent revival off Broadway. There was a concern that she was going to be like difficult to work with because she's so successful in television. And on day one, she wrapped her arms around me and gave me the biggest hug. And we began this like friendship. You know, it was important for us to like build as much chemistry as possible, having never met. And it was very easy. I mean, it was so easy. This was the first time professionally where I played a character that was like into someone, like a romantic element in a character.
That's so true. Yeah.
Which is nuts because I can do it.
You are a romantic lead, my friend.
But it was so easy to fall in love with her every night. She made it so easy.
And of course there was the viral video of you guys doing Suddenly Seymour. I mean, vocals on vocals.
Be More Chill, wonderful experience. It took up such a huge part of my life for so many years. But I have to say, like, spending those 4 months at the Pasadena Playhouse working on Little Shop was like both a career highlight, but also just like an art highlight for me. Mm. It was like, if I ever got to like stand in a room of original Picassos, that feeling of satisfaction is what I got every night doing that show. Okay. The whole cast was amazing. I mean, there wasn't a bad apple in the group. Everyone was A, good person, and B, like, showed up and did their job and did it beautifully.
Wasn't Amber Riley in that as well?
She was.
Oh, my God.
I wanted your production to come to New York.
I know. That was the one we deserved. That was the one we deserved.
Is this drama? Like, I sadly didn't see the Jonathan Groff production, and then it became Gideon Glick, and then it was going to be Jeremy Jordan. In a world where that one hadn't happened, I wonder if yours could have had legs to move to the city. Because
maybe, I mean, I hope, but you know, there were two white people in our production.
Wow. Yeah.
And white people were certainly the minority on stage. So I don't know that the theater owners would have been like, yeah, bring that over.
I know. That's a good point. A sad point, but true.
Sad point. Yeah. Sad, but true. I know that we haven't given up hope on that production. It would be a dream to, at the very least, get to do a cast album.
Oh, yes.
But yeah, I mean, it was, I miss it. I miss it so much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was, gosh, was it almost a year ago?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Be More Chill was happening a year ago right now, and then you went to L.A. right afterwards.
Which we call L.
Which we, yeah.
I went out to L. A week after we closed Be More Chill is when I, so that week after Be More Chill closed, the Monday after closing, I treated myself to a little shopping spree, retail therapy. And then I started packing up all of my belongings and putting them in storage units and getting like the mover situation organized. And then I came. It was a very quick turnaround.
Well, I remember when, this is going back a couple years ago, when you were working on the Jonathan Larson project, we filmed something in front of Jonathan's apartment, and you had just come from viewing an apartment where you were just going to be moving into it. So you lived there only like, what, a year? And then you were gone, and I'm like, wow.
Not even a full year, actually, because we moved into that apartment in September. I was only there for like 10, 11 months.
Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy how quickly life can just turn around, you know?
Yeah.
And then of course, like being, you know, being in LA during the pandemic, I felt really fortunate to be living there instead of New York, only because, you know, apartments are notoriously teensy tiny, unless you're a billionaire. And in LA, for, you know, for what you pay in New York, you get truly like double the space. I have my bedroom in West Hollywood is half bedroom, half like studio. And so I have like a whole like lighting setup to film self tapes and all that stuff. I could never have done that in my apartment in New York.
Mm-mm. You would have been like on top of your tub or something like that.
Oh God. Yeah. No. Or roommates, multiple roommates. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you also then got the opportunity to do Superstore.
Yeah.
With an icon, America Ferrera.
Truly.
Oh my God. We got to stan forever.
She is so talented. Like when she threw the brick through the window in Sisterhood of the Traveling Pan.
And won an Emmy for Ugly Betty.
Mm-hmm. She's amazing, and I'm here vacationing with Nico Santos, who I play America's character's brother, who falls for Nico's character Mateo, and so I'm here with Nico and his boyfriend. That show has been like such a joy to work on. The culture on set really feels like theater.
Fun.
Yeah. There aren't any like monsters. Everyone is like, everyone genuinely enjoys each other and they have fun at work. It's been really
what a joy.
And
I feel like I read that America Ferrera was leaving the show at the end of this season, but it was cut short because of COVID, and that she agreed she's going to come back and wrap up her storyline with the next season, whenever that is able to pick up filming again.
I've been talking with Nico about it, and it looks like they're going to try to start in September.
Cool.
You know, I think America, I mean, my God, she executive produces on Superstore. She stars in it. She started it for 5 years. She was pregnant last season with her second child. And I shot my first episode with her back in October. Had no idea. And then we shot my second episode in December and had no idea until like the last day when she was just I'm pregnant. It's pretty wild.
Now, George, I am not a Superstore watcher, but I feel like that'll probably be one of my upcoming binges as this continues. But I didn't realize that you played a gay character.
Yeah.
Or a queer character.
Yeah. So America's character, Amy, you know, throughout the show, she had mentioned a gay brother.
Okay.
And the story of my getting cast is really crazy. I woke up one morning to a text from Annalie Ashford.
We love.
A text from Nico Santos and a text from Celise Henderson, from who I did Godspell with. And all three of them basically were like wrote the same, like really urgent, long thing. And it was like, your agents are telling casting directors at Superstore that you're offer only, and they need you to come in and do a chemistry read, just so that the studio can approve of the casting. You know, please, please, please come in. They really, really want you. And this was news to me, so I like called my manager. I was like, "What's going on?" He was like, "Yeah, you know, we were just trying to like if they're really interested in you." And they said they need a chemistry read, and we were just like, you know, well, if you really want George, just give him the part. I was like, you guys, let me go in for a chemistry read. It's okay. I'm not that busy right now. I was doing Little Shop at the time, but but I went in for my chemistry read. Nico, I had met Nico years ago. The last time I was in LA, I was doing the CBS Diversity Showcase, and he had done it 2 years or the year before I did it, and he was starting Superstore the first season in this time period. And so I met him from that. He's Filipino and I'm half Filipino, so like instantly there was like, you know, a connection. And you know, here we are. I went in for that chemistry read. Nico met me. Nico got there first. He was like, "Girl, you thirsty?" And I was like, "Yes, I am actually." He was like, "I'm going to show you something." And he took me back in the writer's room. And there's a separate room that is called the LaCroix room. So Superstore is sponsored by LaCroix. Their LaCroix displays are, you know, really prominently displayed on the show. And there's, no joke, a room that's like the size of a living room filled with boxes and boxes and boxes of LaCroix.
Give me that pamplemousse LaCroix.
Oh my God, it was amazing. And then I was like, "Does anybody like the coconut?" And he was like, "No, everyone hates it." And I was like, "I'm going to take an entire case of this." He was like, "Go, take whatever you
coconut's
want."
Coconut's the...
And then we went in. Coconut's
it's
the what?
Controversial. The controversial LaCroix.
It is controversial.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you're going to say you went in?
I understand the argument of the coconut LaCroix tastes like sunscreen. But I'm from Florida, and something about that smell is like comforting. So anyway, we go in, the producers are in the room. It's like a very cramped room. America comes in, you know, I'm hugging everyone. Like we've been friends for decades.
That's very you.
And so we read through it. I have such a blast. And Nico tells me that after I left, they were like, "Oh yeah, he's the only one that we've seen." Nico told me that the casting was originally looking for like really buff, hot Latinos.
Oh, okay.
And when they were coming in, there was like no chemistry, because there wasn't like a silliness or a goo. They were just like really hot. And Nico was like, "You guys, like, we need someone who, like Mateo would like Kiki with, you know,
and maybe Kaikai."
And so then a couple hours later they made the call, and now I'm part of the Superstore family in a small way, but still, it's, I mean, I love it.
Well, I mean, I've seen the images and you certainly look hot on the show. You've got like the hair all slicked back. Like it's great. I mean, he definitely would go for you.
James, the hair guy at Superstore, is maybe my favorite human being I've ever met. And before quarantine, would cut my hair on Sunday mornings on the lot when everyone else was off. He would like go back to work, and then he would give me like a 3-hour haircut for free.
Oh my God!
Oh my goodness!
Literally the nicest person.
Shout out to him. That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm rambling, you guys.
The stories, sorry. I'm sure James could tell about working in the hair room on TV shows, but...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, really quick, because you mentioned Godspell. That was the first time I think I ever saw... Wait, actually, I'm telling a lot.
No, yeah, we saw him in Spring Awakening in Akron, Ohio.
You guys did see me in Spring Awakening in Akron, Ohio.
We went to the stage door.
We did. We have a photo. I think I've sent it to you before.
Oh my God! George. Well, we'll have to put it on our.
Maybe
you have.
Yeah.
But that should be the picture for the social media posts about this episode.
It'll be like a carousel. We can like swipe for a surprise, and that can be there.
Literally. But saw you in that, and then I remember. Okay, so because when we saw Godspell, we were like, "Oh my God, we definitely saw him on tour in Spring Awakening. And I mean, we loved that production of Godspell. We were seniors in high school and we had like finagled our mom into taking us on a trip to the city for a weekend and we were gagged. I just remember like Lindsay Mendez on trampolines and just, we were living.
I mean, Godspell. it was truly like a legendary iconic cast too, you know, like,
oh my God.
Another situation where like everyone just got, I mean, I really feel like I was spoiled by that experience, in that the cast was, again, people with good hearts who show up and kill it. I mean, you know, Uzo Aduba, come on, get out of here. Watching her in rehearsals, I was like, cool, so she's going to be a star in like tomorrow. And then it happened.
And then Anna Maria Perez de Tagle.
Yes.
Is that how you say
it? De Tagle.
De Tagle from Camp Rock was in there.
Yes.
And of course, I mean, my affliction of being in love with men named Hunter began back then because Hunter Parrish was like everything to me.
He's a cutie
in that show.
Beautiful person inside and out. Mm-hmm. I'm happy to report that.
I love that. And then of course I date a Hunter, so you know it all comes full circle in that way. But his gorgeous rendition of Beautiful City is something that I listen to this day. I mean, I believe that revival cast album is the definitive Godspell recording.
I would agree. It's all the songs are bangers. The orchestrations by Michael Holland were vibrant and fun and kind of a la Glee in a way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that was a big thing back then.
Right.
Way back.
10 years ago, 11, 9 years ago. Yeah.
9 years ago.
Yeah. Nick Blamire was in there and
I don't know who that is.
No. The only one who didn't make it.
Oh my God, too many good people. I feel like there's so many things I want to ask you about. Before I forget, because we always like push this to the end of the chat, we like to ask our guests about a ring. Oh, do you like this jarring transition here? About their Ring of Keys moment as it relates to a life in the arts. Do you feel like you have one of those?
Yes. Yeah. So in college, during the summers, a lot of college students will book these like, you know, summer stock gigs. I went to the University of Florida and so I never had summer work because, they didn't think that I would fit in to a production of Carousel or Hello Dolly, at some like old barn that's, converted into a theater. And so instead of just like working a summer job in retail or something, I took a huge blow to my finances and did these two internships in New York City in my last years of college. And they were better than any kind of training program I could have gone to, right? To like spend two summers as a New Yorker. I got to know the subway lines. I got to know how the business works. I got to see really stellar, incredible performances on stage. I worked for Bono Brian Brown. So I got to know how, a Broadway press office functions. Yeah, I mean, it was great. So one of the shows that I saw is, I think the second Broadway show that I ever saw was Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And the great Norbert Leo Butz, who won a Tony Award for that performance. I had, you know, leading up to, in the years leading up to those internships, I was like obsessed with the last 5 years.
Of course.
Just obsessed. And obsessed with his voice and what it can do. And so I was so excited to get to see him live. And this was before he won the Tony. We get there. I'm so excited. The show starts and my jaw just like drops to the ground because his performance was this like high energy, explosive. I mean, it really helped to it really helped me figure out what kind of a performer I wanted to be. Mm. So that's a whole ring of key thing in and of itself, is like, this man just like never stopped giving 1000%. And I was super, super inspired by that. But then after the show, I run over to the stage door. I bought my Dirty Rotten Scoundrels window card. I have like 9 Sharpies. I'm like 260 pounds in like a really skin tight express striped button up shirt and like a tie and jeans and flip flops. Like that was my,
well, you know, express, those are the 2000s.
Oh, slim fit. Even when you shouldn't be wearing a slim fit shirt, honey.
We call it slim thick.
Yeah. As a slim thick shirt. And so I get there, I'm so excited. And he comes out. He's like one of the first people out, which totally tracks. Like straight guys in theater, they're just like, boom, I'm done. All right, mm-hmm. Let's go. There's no like quaffing of the hair. They're still sweating from the show, from the curtain call. And so he's the first one out, and he was the last one to go home. And he took time with each person. It wasn't just like a sign. He took time with each person, especially with young people, especially with myself. Like he took time and talked to me. And I left that night. I was like walking back to the apartment I was staying at. And I was just thinking, wow, like that guy didn't have to do any of that. Mm-hmm. He must be so tired doing that 8 times a week, but he still made time for these people. And I made a pact, a promise to myself that if I ever got to be in that position, that I would be the same type of person, and I would give time to people and in hopes that like my performance may inspire some other brown kid in the way that Norbert inspired me. And so that was my ring of key moment. I think that moment defined the type of artist that I wanted to become.
That's amazing. And I can attest that is who you are.
Because thank you.
When Connor and I saw Be More Chill, we must have waited 45 minutes.
Or so. I'm so sorry.
Oh my God, stop. And it was just like, you know, you took your time with everybody. And that meant the world to the fans who finally got to see their favorite musical that they've been listening to for so long.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've always been like, I've always loved the stage door experience. I've always loved having conversations with people. And it's just, you know, it's always been such a joy for me. But the Be More Chill thing was a whole nother beast in and of itself, because these people changed my life. You know, it wasn't like the Schuberts or the Niederlanders didn't like listen to Be More Chill and go, wait a minute, this is great, let's bring mm-hmm. this to Broadway. It was like the voices of, it was basically like a petition to bring this show back, and it worked. And you know, I owe so much to those fans for helping me get that show to Broadway.
And I mean, I know you might not give yourself this credit, but I think you're a huge part of what they latched onto. I mean, because your interactions with fans online and your unbelievable talent, and specifically in the song "Michael in the Bathroom," that everyone,
it was for me.
I feel like that was how I first heard about Be More Chill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that seemed to be the gateway drug into the show, what a really incredible journey that show had, and will continue to have.
Yeah.
And to have gotten to be a part of that, you know, it was wild. It was, I felt like I was in the eye of the storm, but it was the best thing ever. You know, it's now like, my God. It started getting popular in 2017, in the summer of 2017. Mm. And over that time, I mean, you know, I have this incredible group of supporters across the country and in some cases across the world, who are, you know, maybe some of the smartest, wittiest, funniest, most inspiring, nicest, caring, compassionate, empathic, like people that I have ever come across. A friend of a friend was FaceTiming with that friend, and I don't know what sparked this comment, but she was like, "Is George there? George, your fans are so nice." And I was like, "Yeah, no, truly, they're the best people. They really are the best people. They inspire the shit out of me because they are, they're going to be the theater makers after us and mm-hmm. the policymakers after us. And I just feel like we're all in such good hands. Yeah, they're the best. I'm very grateful for Be More Chill. I'm very grateful for Joe Iconis. I'm very grateful to like a bunch of strangers on the internet that I have either met or have never met.
I'm just thinking about mm-hmm. how extraordinary that performance was and how it's been about a year since Be More Chill closed on Broadway. When you look back on it, is there any like one memory you think of? Like perhaps just the Broadway run that like, you know, that comes to mind right away that you're like, oh, Be More Chill.
Yeah, you know, I had some vocal issues that came up during second preview. I hemorrhaged a vocal cord, and that had never happened before. Like, even with The Lightning Thief, I was playing dual characters, and, mm-hmm. and one of the characters, Mr. D, the camp counselor, the voice was like over here. It was very gravelly and rough. And even then, like, I had no problems. But, you know, doing a show on Broadway versus doing that same show off Broadway, the run that we did at the Signature, completely different beasts, right? I was doing like a lot of press off Broadway, but once we moved to Broadway, you know, obviously there's like Tony campaigns and this and blah, 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 and all the other extra shit. And it just was, I mean, it's a lot. It's really a lot. Going from like interview to interview to interview in one day and then going and doing two shows. It really like takes a toll on you. And, you know, that night something happened. We still don't really know what caused it, but my voice wasn't working like at all. And I discovered that maybe about 20 minutes into act one. And then was having an anxiety attack throughout the whole show because I knew that I was going to get to Michael in the bathroom and I was going to have trouble. And so we get to it. And sure enough, like, I mean, singing has never been painful. This was painful. I couldn't make the sounds. And was actually having an anxiety attack on stage. So people, I think, in the audience thought that like I was getting super emotional.
Yeah.
I was, but it was because I was losing my voice. So, you know, that was this like dark cloud that kind of, you know, followed me everywhere I went, over the next couple of months. But then the thing that I'm, you know, the thing that I'm really grateful for is that closing performance was there was so much love, at the Lyceum that night. You know, standing ovations after every number, entrance applause for all the cast. I mean, it felt like the like farewell.
yes.
Like a Cher's farewell performance, you know?
Right.
The eighth one. It felt there was just so much love in that room and it was so overwhelming. And so that I think is the one memory that I'm so glad that that's how that turned out, because it completely helps me to forget how hard of a time I was having for a period of about a month.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I remember we saw you in, I think it was one of the last previews, and you were on full vocal rest afterwards. And we were like, we know you can't verbally say yes, so we're going to ask you right now, will you do our podcast? And you were like,
and a year later, here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was supposed to have surgery. We were like planning surgery. I was going to plan, I was about to book a flight to like the Caribbean, for the recovery period.
Okay.
Because, a good friend, Telly had vocal issues in the past and, had to get surgery. And then flew out to the Bahamas and did his like, you know, 3 weeks of
that sounds
rest
amazing.
On the beach. And I mean, that's the best way to do it, right? Yeah, but somehow, I mean, truly, literally, a miracle happened, and I, and the hemorrhage healed itself.
Wow.
And I didn't need surgery. I mean, it was literally, I still to this day, I try to figure out, like, okay, what was the lesson to learn from that? You know? Because it really feels like the universe was trying to get me to, I don't know. I don't know what. Mm. I think the universe is probably telling me to slow the fuck down. Mm. You know? Maybe. And then once I got to slow down, and once I took that, then it was like, okay, you may resume.
I think it was also probably a lesson in just how resilient you are, and you prove to yourself that you're able to push through something so scary and stressful during what should have been one of the most, I think, exciting career moments, perhaps. But you got through it, and you healed, and you made it work. And I think that's really amazing.
Well, I think it's mostly a testament to my doctors and my voice teacher, Amanda Flynn, and like my best friends who would come and keep me company during the shows while I was like just at home, upset and depressed, mm. and writing on a whiteboard. I found a bunch of old notes on my iPhone from when I was on vocal rest and was trying to communicate to friends who were over, and reading through some of it, it's like so sad.
Aww.
It's so sad. There were like a couple of like entries where I was just like, I just want to sing again.
Mm. That's cute, but so sad.
It hurts to be home and not be there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after how hard we all worked to get that show back.
And I feel like we as fans were all along for every step of the ride. Like, you all posted so much on social media and really took us along with you on the journey, which was such a nice treat. And so I'm sure it was hard for you to see your castmates and everyone posting about fun things that happened and then feeling
left out.
Yeah,
that was tough. That was really tough. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Troy Iwata, my dear friend, was the standby for Michael. And he did previews.
Right.
He did the previews. And was so lovely and so perfect. And there was one night where, what I was doing was I was going to the theater during rehearsals, during previews, and sitting in the house so that I was, you know, up to date with any changes that were happening, so that, you know, I don't like heal and then jump in and be like, wait, what? What is this scene? and there was one day where I watched Troy do a bunch of the rehearsal stuff, and I asked the stage manager, I was like, hey, can I stay and watch? And I forget where, they put me up in like the box, like behind the box, in the stairwell behind the box. And I just like watched the show from a curtain, and it was beautiful. It was like really cool. You never get to do that, you know? Mm. You really never get to see the show that you're working on, unless of course you swing out. But at that point, we were still in previews. So hiding from fans was very successful.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. Like, wait, why is George here and not on stage? But Troy was so wonderful, and the role was in such good hands. And so I'm also so grateful to Troy, because I got to, you know, he took the load, and I, whoops. He took on that responsibility, and he did it with such grace and such perfection, and I fell in love with his Michael Mal, he allowed me to relieve myself of stress and pressure. Wow. So that I could focus on getting better.
Mm-hmm.
It was amazing.
That's incredible.
He's amazing.
I did want to ask as well about, you mentioned that you're half Filipino, and mm-hmm. I feel as though that's one of the areas of Broadway and theater performers that is very underrepresented. Do you mm-hmm. feel as though like you had any role models that you could look up to when you were kind of coming up? I mean, obviously Norbert Leo Butz is incredible, but to see sort of more representation.
I did not see myself. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw Jose Lana, who has become a friend and coworker through Here Lies Love. I saw him in Putnam County Spelling Bee, and that experience was incredibly inspiring. But you know, I'm half Filipino, and I kind of early on in life realize that my mix is very unique and that Asians and Latinos don't typically get together and start a family. And now, like, my half sister, she's my sister, but, you know, we have different fathers. She's full Filipino. Her husband is Dominican. And so, you know, her kids look like I did. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it brings me joy to know that, like, you know, when I'm on Superstore or the Playbill Pride live stream, mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever it is, when they watch, they're seeing their uncle, but also somebody who looks like them. And that has become, you know, the number one priority on my mission statement as an artist, is that I want to continue to be the person that I didn't have coming up. You know, John Leguizamo put it best. He said, when you don't see yourself represented in media, you feel fucking invisible.
Mm.
And so growing up like that, and then coming to New York in an industry that is not dominated by people who look like me, it became very clear to me very fast that I was going to have to, and this is not to say that any one type of person works harder than the other, but I realized that I had to go far above and beyond to A, be noticed, B, be accepted, C, be hired. You know, it was a lot of hard work, and it still is. My hope is that Little Brown Kids, and, you know, during Little Shop, I got to meet a lot of people who looked like me, young people who looked like me at the stage door in a way that I didn't get to see on Broadway. Because growing up, I couldn't afford a plane ticket. My family couldn't afford a plane ticket to New York for every family member, hotel accommodations, Broadway show tickets. It just wasn't a part of the equation for us. But bringing that show, doing that show in LA, brought such a beautifully diverse group of audience members, and it was fucking lovely. It was the best. But that's kind of where I stand. Is just like, representation really matters, and real representation. You mm-hmm. know, it shouldn't be like, well, it's just George in a cast of a show, and he's the guy. It should be an equal landscape
mm-hmm.
for everyone.
Absolutely. And I think Be More Chill succeeded in that, especially. I remember seeing, like, when understudies would go on there, it would be like the most diverse cast on Broadway at times on any given night, you know. Like, I think it's just amazing. And you're talking about meeting these kids out in LA, like, that's the stuff that makes me sob, because I think about, you know, when I was a kid, not having many gay role models that I looked up to, and I'm a cis white person, you know what I mean? So it's even more rare. So I just think that when a little kid sees you on Superstore, or you're, you know, starring as Michael Mel on Broadway in this show, like, it is everything they need to be like, I can do that. And that's just so beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a simple concept, but, you know, it has taken a lot of time and a movement for people to understand. And I'm not sure that everyone understands quite yet, but, like, truly just the act of seeing someone who looks like you on TV, in theater, it is powerful in a way that I think most people can't understand or grasp. It just is. And so I miss performing so much.
Mm-hmm.
I miss live theater. And I can't wait to get back into it again, specifically for that transaction between actor and audience at the stage door.
Well, I am excited to see what is in store for you, which I'm sure there's some things cooking, but we'll see. Connor, do you want to bring us into our final part of the pod?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So as we are wrapping up this fabulous conversation, we like to end on a dose of drama, something kind of steamy or on the tips of our tongues for this cultural moment. It could be a piece of content you're consuming. It could be something on your mind. It could be true drama. It could be really whatever you're thinking of. And I have some drama that I've been waiting to say, but other things have just felt more important. But so one of my favorite authors published a book, a fiction book. And I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to give away like the specifics. I suppose if you're really looking into it, you could figure it out. But I was so excited for this book to come out. So I'm, you know, casually just reading this work of fiction, and a character popped up that I was like, oh, this sounds like somebody that I was kind of seeing earlier this year, pre-COVID, and I'm still kind of talking to. Like, this is weird. Like, some of these details are very specific. So I'm just, like, still reading the book, whatever, whatever. And then it becomes deliberately clear that this is that person, in a fictionalized version of this person that I had been seeing pre-COVID, you know, casually. And so I make it to the end of the book, and my heart's racing, and his name is in the acknowledgments. So, like, it's all there. He is friends with this author and had this huge fictionalized role in this book, and I just feel such deeply complicated feelings about finding this, you know, almost lover in the pages of one of my favorite author's fiction books. I just can't even wrap my mind around the strangeness of this time in my life. But
that's insane. Anyway,
absolutely insane. And we still talk, and I was like,
there had been no discussion about this.
Not about the book. We've talked since, and I didn't bring it up, but I don't want him to think, I don't know, so weird. Just very odd.
Wow. Yeah, odd.
We'll talk off pod, but such a strange...
That is dramatic.
That's drama. It's hilarious to me, but I can imagine how traumatized Connor is by this person who can't seem to shake like a ghost.
Who knows? I actually went on a... I'm saying so much. I don't think he listened to this podcast, but... We went on a date the night before Broadway shut down. And so that was like, what, March 11th? Mm-hmm. It was a Wednesday. And I remember, this is like the scope of how seriously we all took COVID, like how quickly things changed. But literally the day before, he was like, oh yeah, I'll see you there. Like, I might be in a hazmat suit at a different table, but like, I'll risk COVID-19 for this other date. And I remember like being like, haha, funny. Like, and then the next day, the whole world, to quote Hamilton, the world turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, drama. DM me for details. I'm like happy to share.
Yeah, I need to know what this book is.
I know, it's crazy.
We'll let George go last. I just want to share my dose of drama for today, which is that the British government has promised $2 billion, I think it's like 1.87 billion euros, to save its cultural institutions. And, you know, America needs to follow suit. This is a disaster that we're undergoing, in particular in New York, but I mean everywhere. Movie theaters, theaters, like, we need to do something, or you're not going to see the economy restore the way that it needs to, or the way that people think that it's going to, by reopening everything soon. And we're in turmoil, and we need to take the lead of Boris Johnson, something I never thought I'd say.
Truly. Mm-hmm. But actually, I mean, I know. That's amazing. I wish that our government did things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just cutting funding
right.
to arts programs and arts education. And yeah. Well, it looks like I'm moving to England.
We're going.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, that.
Pfft. Yeah,
if only.
I know.
Truly, hashtag save the arts.
Save the arts.
Yeah, you know, I'm in talks with Danny Feldman, the artistic director at the Pasadena Playhouse, about doing an experimental cabaret act, live at the Playhouse, with no audience. It'll okay. be streamed. The idea is the band would be on stage, and there'd be no woodwinds, so it would just be, you know, guitar, drums, bass, piano, and then I would sing from the audience, from an empty auditorium, from an empty theater. And so we're in the beginning stages of trying to figure out what that show is, and but I'm worried for institutions like the Pasadena Playhouse. You know, like, the Broadway is a multi-billion-dollar monster machine.
Yes.
And these smaller theaters that bring work like the our production of Little Shop. Mm-hmm. They're suffering, you know? And so, you know, if anyone is listening to this and has a couple of bucks to spare, I would encourage you to find a regional theater that you love and send them a donation. I mean, truly, like anything will help, because they're really hurting these days, and our government doesn't.
They don't care. That's a great recommendation, George. I love that.
George, you're the hero of our times right now.
No, I'm the lobster of the times right now.
All right. That's fair. Well, this has been so much fun. I can't believe how long we've been talking. George, you mean so much to so many people, but you really mean a lot to Connor and I. And we're so thankful that you took the time today to share just some stories.
I love and adore and appreciate both of you. Thank you for having me on. And I'm sorry it took so long to make this happen.
It was worth the wait. If you're not following George already, which I'm sure you are, it's at George Salazar on Twitter and Instagram, right? It's just your first and last name. All right. And we'll share all of that information. And you can check us out at The Drama Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And as Connor mentioned, follow him. He's trying to get those.
Like an hour ago, I was like, follow me. And the message is, you know, still out there to everyone. I'm just being stupid. And also follow Dylan, because, you know, Dylan kills it on Twitter, at Dylan McDowell. Okay, I'm annoying myself. George, thank you. We love you.
We love you so much.
I love you guys too. Thank you for having me on.
All right, Connor, we will see you next time. Drama.